Welcome to the Wampa's Lair Podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl Eclair and Jason Hunt, discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair Podcast. This is episode 245, Scum and Villainy. I am your host, Carl Eclair, and I am joined by a very special last-minute guest. Thank the Force for this man. It is the Sam Witwer to my Ian McDermott, I guess. It's J.C. Reifenberg. Hey, J.C.
Hey, man. 245 episodes? That's crazy. How long have you been going?
We're almost to 6 years.
Holy cow. That's like when I met you, I think.
Yeah, that is.
6 years ago.
That's precisely. Yeah, exactly. It was at Fan Days that I met Jason, and then we launched this shortly after.
Oh, that's crazy. I like the Sam Witwer comparison. He and I grew up in the same hometown.
Well,
a couple miles away from each other.
The reason I was thinking it, too, is you sound so much like him.
Yeah, I've spent some time with him, and sometimes, like, if we're out at dinner or something, people will be like, are you guys brothers? But we just talk similarly and have pasty white vampire skin. So, you know, I guess it's just because that's what happens when you grow up outside of Chicago.
Well, all the same, I'm really glad that you were able to hop on last minute. Those of you know, we were supposed to get out our second episode of the Essential Star Wars tonight. Unfortunately, Greg couldn't be with us. Something came up. So I was really lucky to see JC online today. I was like, hey, man, you want to come on the show? And I'm very, very lucky that you were able to oblige.
Oh, yeah. I love talking Star Wars and hanging out virtually with people I haven't seen in way too long.
Yeah,
so, I'm always game.
I don't think I bumped into you at all at Orlando this past year. Well, no, just this past April. It wasn't even last year. Were you there? Were you there?
Of course I was there. Yeah. I've been to Celebration in the United States since Celebration 2. So I've been to 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, Anaheim, Orlando.
You're a vet.
And I will keep going to them. I wish I had a time machine so I could say I went to the first one, but, you know, I was not old enough to venture out to Denver on my own at that point.
Where was the second one? Was it Indianapolis?
Indianapolis was number 2 and number 3. Number 4 was Los Angeles. 5 and 6 were Orlando, and then Anaheim, and then back to Orlando.
Right. Well, you know, so the title of this episode, of course, is on purpose, as they usually are, I guess you'd say. But you are the proud entrepreneur, creator of a Star Wars-inspired bar/cantina in the Hollywood area called Scum and Villainy.
Yes, yes, yes. It is the tagline we're using now is your friendly neighborhood geek bar. And it's what I've realized. I think we opened in April. So we're wrapping up month 5 right now of being open. This was the first month we were open, no cover charge, free, just a walk in. We're keeping regular business hours. And what I've learned over the past 4 or 5 months is, you know, there are a million sports bars in the world, but there aren't very many geek bars. And it's always been kind of a thing where geeks hang out at the comic book shop on a Friday night and they play Magic the Gathering or they play, you know, Dungeons and Dragons or board games. But geekdom is like the new sports. If you watch ESPN, they have drone racing and e-gaming and, you know, the Walt Disney Company owns ESPN, and their ratings have been falling off slowly over the past handful of years. But Disney's cashing a $1 billion check every time a Star Wars movie comes out or a Marvel movie. And there's something to that there's a need that I don't think was being fulfilled to create a local community gathering spot where people can eat and have a drink and talk about, you know, what's going on in the world of nerd.
Yeah. Wow. What a see again. So for those, I think we've had you on the show a few times, but it's been a long time. And
I years. I think, yeah, at this point,
I regret that, but I will say just to put it out there that what is always, I've just kind of, even from afar, observed about you and your own fandom is how creative you are with it. And you find these really exciting ways to express it. I mean, so obviously when I first met you, it was Hughes the Force, right? That amazing film that you produced and directed and wrote, and right, like this beautiful combination of John Hughes meets Star Wars. And right, it was showcased at Fan Days, you know, 6 years ago, and it was just incredible. And every time I've talked to you about anything, whether it's Star Wars or even just about life, you have such a unique perspective, and because you've done it, like you've done the hard work to get where you are. And I just think it's so cool that you're able to see, like, oh, I mean, just listening to you say that, like, oh, there's a need for a place for geeks to hang out besides just a comic shop. Well, why don't I start this? Like, such a simple thought, but no one else has had it. And like, and not only did you just have it, but you made it happen, which is so awesome.
Thank you. You're too kind. I would say I'm lucky, but I'm a firm believer in what Obi-Wan Kenobi said, which is, in my experience, there's no such thing as luck. And what I attribute a lot to is passion. Mm. And something that Yoda says is not being afraid, right? Fear leads to the dark side. So if you're not afraid and you're passionate, and people confuse passion with hobby. A passion is something that you would do for free, that you would do because you love it, that you are compelled to do. So your podcast is your passion, right? Yeah. And you do it because for the love of doing it. And if you have something that you are passionate about, and you're not afraid to chase that passion and wear your geek pride or, you know, any of those sorts of things, like, you will find success within that world. Also, patience. Basically, everything you need to know, you can learn from Star Wars. How's that?
Well, so obviously, taking the time to do this, I'm really curious because I was saying to you before we even hit the record button, but I know you've probably answered these questions 1,000 times, but probably to a lot of our listeners, they may not know. And also, many of our listeners may not even be aware of what Scum and Villainy is. And again, I'm going to encourage anyone who doesn't know what I'm talking about, just literally right now, hop on Scum and Villainy, cantina.com. You know, you'll find everything you need right there. It's just this awesomely inspired bar that you have in the Hollywood area of California. Now, I mean, I hope to get out there someday. I mean, I know those of you who know the Star Wars Report, Riley was out there not too long ago.
Oh, yeah.
He got to enjoy it. Awesome. And I saw his, you know, his Instagrams, and he was snapping me from it. And I was like, oh, man, I am jealous. So, I mean, you've kind of already started to tell us this story, but, you know, this came out of something you observed for a need in the geek community. But tell me how you went about making this a reality, right? Like, you had the idea. Flush that out. What happened next? How'd you do it?
So life finds a way, right? It's an idea I had when I was just a little kid. Just because I thought it would be neat. And my girlfriend designs bars and restaurants for a living. Did I lose you?
What's that? No, I'm here.
Oh, okay, cool. my girlfriend designs bars and restaurants for a living, and I kind of had this idea pop back into my head. And, you know, it's a situation of like, oh, my gosh, honey, what do you – like, could we reach out to some of the restaurant people that you know? Because I've never run a restaurant or a bar, and she's never run a restaurant or a bar. And do you think that they would go for this idea? So I kind of put together a little business plan type thing and pitched it to them. And I said, hey, you know, we can do it like this. And I think we can, you know, do this sort of like ticket pre-sale thing. And then the first people to buy their tickets get to get the first choice of when they want to come. And so we were actually in Chicago at the time, and we got back to Los Angeles and kind of pitched the idea to this restaurant group that she's worked with quite a bit. And they went for it. So, you know, that was in June of 2016. And then we opened our doors in April of 2017.
Wow. So did you open before Celebration or after?
We opened right before Celebration. Okay. And it's funny because I was having so much fun hanging out with the people at Scum and Villainy, all of the people who bought tickets, who were dressing up, who were having a good time there. And, you know, I would walk around and I'd talk about the bar, and I'd get, you know, we had people coming in from, we actually had a couple stop. They flew in from Australia. It was a family, and they created a layover at LAX long enough to go to Scum and Villainy on their way to Celebration Orlando. How cool is that?
That's so cool.
So I got to hang out with these people on their way to Celebration. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to Celebration like the day after you're leaving. So it was so neat. I almost didn't want to go to Celebration because to me, like, Scum and Villainy is almost like hanging out at the hotel bar after Celebration every single night. You know, we haven't had any, fights at the bar in 5 months. We've had very few, like, kind of like overly drunk, disorderly people. You know, it's really just cool people coming to hang out and meet cool people. It's the goal is to be an immersive environment. So we're actually located on Hollywood Boulevard, between the Pantages Theater, which right now is playing Hamilton, but that's where they had like the Wonder Woman premiere and the Rogue One premiere and Force Awakens premiere and the Chinese Theater and the El Capitan Theater. So we're right there on Hollywood Boulevard on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. But you walk through the front door and there are no windows to the outside world. And we don't have any television sets or monitors or anything like that in there, because I want you to be able to walk into Scum and Villainy and feel like you're on another planet. Like, you don't have to think about your bills. You don't have to think about, you know, any of the garbage that's going on out here. It's an escape. It's a play set. You get to put on a costume and go in and play pretend for a little bit with other people who are looking to do the same thing. And it's pretty cool. It's pretty neat. I almost did not go to Celebration because of it. And then I was like, oh, who are you kidding? I've got to go to Celebration.
You got to at least continue the streak.
So I know I can't not go. Who would I be?
Well, you know, so I know that, so Scum and Villainy is like you said, you know, it's this bar that caters to all forms of geekdom and geek fandom. But obviously, since this is, you know, a Star Wars podcast, I'm going to gear my questions a little bit more towards the Star Wars realm of it.
Okay.
Because I think it's pretty, you know, it's pretty clear that that is the primary inspiration, at least of the physical setting.
Yes.
You know.
Yes, yes.
So. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, I'm sorry to interrupt. You know, you walk in. And it's, you know, it's taking things that we all know and love and are familiar with and making them functional and making them basically taking part of another world and adapting it to our world. So, you know, what is it that feels familiar that you love about like the Mos Eisley Cantina, and then creating it in a way that you're not ripping anything off, that you're drawing inspiration from that. You know, so we have booths, you know, with circular tables, and we have a horseshoe shaped bar and all sorts of things like that.
Yeah. So when you decided, okay, well, who decided on the design? Were you the one who kind of pictured, like, here's what I want this to look like?
So yeah, I mean, it was my girlfriend and I worked on it together, which is really cool, because it was something that, you know, I'm a creative person and she's a creative person, and it was something that we got to create together and take ownership on. And so we really worked together in terms of, like, how do we, you know, what elements can we adapt? What elements do we have to throw away? And how do we make it, how do we make it work with the location that we have too? You know, even if you wanted to copy, you know, create a one-to-one scale replica of what was in the movie, it wouldn't work. Mm-hmm. You know, not only just functionally, but the business of it wouldn't work. There's seating for like 37 people at Chelman's Cantina. And it's a, you know, 48 foot by 48 foot space or something like that. So, you know, in Los Angeles, you're looking at rent of $40,000 to $50,000 a month just to pay rent on the space. Sure. You know, so you're, if somebody wanted to open an actual Chelman's Cantina, like Disney wanted to do that on Hollywood Boulevard, they're looking at the overhead cost would just be incredible. You know, you're looking at $25, $30, $40 drinks just for, you know, a Jack and Coke to pay the rent.
Right.
So it's like, what, you know, how do you make it fit in the space? How do you make it functional? And how do you provide the service that, you know, the real world service that the guests need? And I think we've done a pretty good job. I think, for the most part, people come in and have a good time, and a lot of people meet new friends there, which is cool because we don't have a television set to distract you. You know, people don't sit at the bar and play Bejeweled. People sit at the bar and talk to other people, which is neat to see, especially today.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I just started working at a new college campus, and just in a few things I've been at, it's like you'll see a group of students sitting at a table and they're all on their phone. I'm like, oh, all right.
Yeah. Okay.
It must be great friends.
It's like wearing a sign on your forehead that says, don't bother me. Right. Yeah. And like, I understand that sometimes if you're sitting on a train and you pick up a book or you go on your phone because you don't want to talk to somebody on the train, but like, they're going out to a bar for the most part. They're there to be social.
Right.
So, did I answer your question?
Yes, it did. Yes, it did.
Okay, cool.
So let me ask this then. Music. I assume you're playing. Is there music playing?
So, yes. So while we were a pop-up, what I really tried to do was create a playlist. I tried to basically do what George did with the design of Star Wars. So what George did with the design of Star Wars is take something that we all know, something familiar, and present it in a way that we haven't seen before. So, you know, all the pieces that make up the spaceships and all the pieces that make up the costume allude to things in this world. But it's a little bit of a different take on it. So what we tried to do is take music that you've heard from the Cantina or Jabba's Palace or kind of that world of things, and then find music that is being created by artists on Earth and play that sort of style of music. So a lot of like electro swing kind of, you know, like high energy swing dance type of music that's not Big Bad Voodoo Daddy, but, you know, some lesser known people to really get you in that mood. Since we've transitioned over in the last month, music-wise, what I've done is I looked more towards, say, like Guardians of the Galaxy for inspiration.
Okay.
And if you, you know, because, again, Guardians of the Galaxy is something obviously heavily influenced by Star Wars, but what James Gunn's been able to do is put his take on it, and you get to see that world through his eyes. And the music of Guardians of the Galaxy, I connect, it's classic, it's timeless, but it's fun. And as much as people might think that they want to go and listen to John Williams classical music at a bar on Friday night, it doesn't make for a very good time. You know, I love the Parade of the Ewoks song, but it's not something you want to get up and dance to or right. sing along with. You know, Land of the Jawas, you know, again, not a good bar song. Even Binary Sunset, like, do you really, you know, it's kind of a sad tune that you don't really, it's not like you want to make a toast to it unless somebody died. So, so I looked to Guardians of the Galaxy for inspiration.
Come on, man. You don't want to rock out to this at a bar? Oh, yeah.
Right?
Here we go. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. We're having a great time.
I guess it would be like the slowest paced conga line in history, right? So, you know, it's a lot of like late 70s, 80s kind of stuff. You know, Joe Hogan, who I'm sure your listeners all know.
Oh, yeah.
Joe Hogan loves Ghostbusters too.
Mm-hmm.
If Joe Hogan came into the bar, we have all those amazingly terrible songs from Ghostbusters 2 on our playlist. Cleaning Up the Town and whatever that Statue of Liberty song is at the end. That's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know. The Axel Foley theme song is on our playlist. All the Miko disco stuff is on the playlist. And of course, I have found 27 different takes on the classic John Williams Cantina song. So if you want to hear it in reggae, steel drum, barbershop quartet, all sorts of stuff like that, we have all of that on the playlist. We have all sorts of fun, like acoustic, solo acoustic, dirty guitar player version of Yub Nub. So all that's on there, along with if you guys have ever heard of High Adventure, which is a guy, Glenn in Connecticut, has this band called High Adventure that does all sorts of fun, inspired, geeky music. You know, like if I'm looking at his album right now, he's got a song called Save Han. He's got a song called Ahsoka Lives. He's got some like songs about Gremlins and Indiana Jones. Just fun. It's fun stuff. You know?
Sure. Yeah.
And actually, the Scum and Villainy, if you look up Scum and Villainy Rock on Spotify, our playlist is public, so you can listen to it at home and pretend you're at the bar.
Great. I just pulled it up. yeah, because I love music, so I was really curious about that, like what kind of stuff you were doing, because I didn't think it was going to be you were like playing, a ton of John Williams, because that's random.
Yeah, well, and it's also like, I don't know, man. If you walk into a bar on Dantooine, I don't think they'd be playing the Funeral Pyre for a Jedi. You know what I mean? Like, it just doesn't.
Right.
It's meant to be background music. By the way, I love that you started with Cantina Band number 2.
Oh, it's I like it more, to be honest. It's like a little more
subtle. I do too. And people don't. The thing is that people watched the Family Guy episode of the Star Wars Family Guy episode, mm-hmm. and they have that like funny joke, play that same song again. Okay, you know, do. If you actually listen to the Cantina Band song, it's 3.5 minutes long, and the do is like 20 seconds of it. So yeah. If somebody goes to the bathroom, I've literally had people go to the bathroom, come out and be like, you never play the Cantina song. And I'm like, it's on right now. And they're like, no, the Cantina song goes do, 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 do. And I'm like, no, but this is the rest of the song that you don't know.
Yeah, clearly.
You know,
right.
You know, and I had somebody, it was funny. I had somebody the other night say that, and I had Cantina Band song number 2 was playing, and they're like, this is in the movie. And I just went through and I did the whole scene, you know, where it's like, Han Solo, Captain of the Millennium Falcon, Chewie here tells me you're looking for passage to the Alderaan system. Yes, indeed, if it's a fast ship. Fast ship? You've never heard of the Millennium Falcon? Should I have? It's a ship that made the Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs. So I did that whole scene.
Yeah.
And I'm like, do you recognize the music now? And they're like, yes, we do.
I'm loving this playlist. I can't wait to dive into this even on my own.
Oh, did you actually?
Yeah, I pulled it up. This is great.
Amazing.
There's so much good stuff here. But, man. Yeah, so I like this idea that it's something extremely immersive. And obviously I see a lot of the pictures that people posted. A friend from grad school who I haven't seen since grad school, which was almost 7 years ago. He just, you know, I mean, I still follow him on Instagram, and he threw up some pictures, you know, a couple weeks ago from being in there. He's like, I'm at this really cool Star Wars bar. And part of me was just like, you know, F you. Like, you don't even know, you don't even like Star Wars. So I immediately messaged him. I'm like, yeah, I know the owner. it was like my dad's bigger than your dad type of a thing. But yeah, I mean, he was raving about it. And he enjoys Star Wars. But and again, like, I want to be clear, you don't have to like Star Wars or be a Star Wars fan to enjoy Scum and Villainy. That's very clear. But yeah, I was just jealous because I was like, oh man, I should be able to go there before this noob. But I think he lives out there, so it's a little bit easier.
You know, there's two kind of takes on, and neither one is right or wrong, on if you're going to create a geek bar or a fandom bar. And Las Vegas has done a couple of these. And there's another one in San Jose called Seven Stars. And they've created a bar where someone like you or I, who has like a big Star Wars collection, is basically created a museum around their bar, right? So all of their cool stuff and decor that normally sits in boxes in a basement or in a, you know, in a Star Wars room in a house, they've decorated their bar with, which is cool. Yeah. It's neat, but that's kind of the opposite direction than we went, where we wanted you to feel as if you were on a playset, right? You're a Kenner action figure, and this is a playset. So there aren't, you know, some people are like, there's nothing Star Wars about this place. And I was like, well, you know, if Han Solo walked, first off, we can't really do that because we're not a licensed bar. But second off, if Han Solo walked into a bar and he saw a movie poster with his face on it that said Star Wars, he'd be like, what is this? Right. So we tried to create a world where people could go and pretend, as opposed to a spot where people have a lot to look at memorabilia wise.
Okay. Sure. So I wanted to ask you about your, I was looking over your website today, and you have a trivia night on Wednesday nights. Is that a particular kind of trivia? Like, do you change it up each week or?
So it's a company called Geeks Who Drink, who is a, national company. And they've got the perfect name. So what they say is their trivia contests are, the questions are tailored to anything that people can be geeky about. So there are some like political geared trivia questions, because I mean, let's face it, like, politics, people are super geeky about politics. Mm-hmm. You know, people are super geeky about Star Wars, Harry Potter, you know, anything that people can be geeky about. Geeks Who Drink does trivia questions cater to that. So it's not just Star Wars questions. It's not just Star Wars and Harry Potter questions, which, you know, to me, I think that's fun 1 week or maybe, you know, once every couple months. But, you know, it's not fun to just go and do Star Wars trivia for 3 hours a night every week.
Sure.
You know, it starts to get old. And then the questions start to get so obscure. Like, during the Battle of Thyfera, what was Cornhorn's call sign? And people, and like, the majority of the world doesn't know that he was Rogue 10, at, you know, during the Back to War book by Michael J. Stackpole that came out in 1997. you know?
Bam!
I might know that. I might know that. But most people don't. And it's not fun unless people, unless there's competition.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, last week was cool. Like, it was our first trivia night. Tomorrow will be our second. We had 32 teams show up, which is a record for Los Angeles, which was kind of cool that we broke the Geeks Who Drink record on our first night.
Yeah.
And I wasn't in town, so I missed trivia last week. But I'm super excited to be there tomorrow and see all the people that show up and are getting their geek on.
That's awesome.
But, you know, the other thing we've done is, like, since we switched out of being a pop-up, we have a new drink menu. So we have tons of specialty cocktails and mixology-based drinks. We have one called the Legionnaire that we created to honor the 501st and the Rebel Legion and the Mando Mercs and the Saber Guild and all of these great costuming clubs, where if you show up and you show your like guild or legion challenge coin, you save a buck on your drink. If you buy two of them and show your challenge coin, you save $4 on both drinks, so $2 per drink, to try to encourage and respect and honor the camaraderie that those costuming groups have built in the fan community. Mm-hmm. You know, we have other fun ones like Asteroid Field, which is like, we fill up the glass with a whole bunch of cotton candy, and we have this concoction that our bartenders mix up, and it gets poured over the cotton candy, and the cotton candy dissolves up into the drink, so it looks kind of like a nebula. And then we throw what I'm calling like glitter stem spice on top, but it's really just Pop Rocks. And so when you drink it, it explodes in your mouth like an asteroid field.
That's so cool.
So we have a lot of fun little kind of things like that. We have a drink called the Forest Moon, which we claim is a Tawani family recipe, which is like a real deep cut. If you know, let me ask you, do you know what Tawani is? T-O-W-A-N-I?
No, and I'm embarrassed.
Tawani is the last name of Sindel and Mace Tawani, were the main characters in the Ewok Adventure made-for-TV movie. And Sindel was the main little girl, little blonde girl in the Ewoks, the Battle for Endor, okay, made-for-TV movie in the mid-80s. So I figured, like, oh, you know, maybe she came up with she had a family recipe for a drink. And so we did something, you know, we built a drink around that. and we're going to just keep doing fun stuff. We're going to do costume. I mean, every night, to be fair, is costume night, but we're going to do costume cosplay special nights and sci-fi bingo, which I'm super excited about. So we're going to keep rolling stuff out. We just put tickets up today, actually, for Kevin Smith is going to come and start doing his Fat Man on Batman podcast from the bar every here and there. So people will get to buy tickets and come and see Kevin do his podcast live, which should be pretty fun because the bar is pretty intimate. So he'll be up close and personal with Kevin Smith, who's, you know, a geek hero. You know, all sorts of fun stuff, anything we can come up with to bring the community together and provide a a venue for people to meet new friends that will become their best friends, just like you and I met at Fan Days a million years ago.
That's great. You know, I mean, this whole, the whole venture itself is just such a constantly percolating space for creativity. I really can't wait to get out there at some point. And it's so cool to see that it's not just a pop-up anymore, right? I mean, the fact that this seems like... So, well, let me ask you, is it going to become something permanent then?
So, I mean, the plan is just to be permanent now, just mm-hmm. to exist right there on Hollywood Boulevard and continue to, cater to fandom, you know, and come up with new and exciting, you know, little treats for people when they come in and host events and, really be like, instead of just going to Comic-Con 4 days a year, this is a place where you can wear your Anovos costume every Friday night. Mm-hmm. And you're the coolest person in the bar. You know, if you wore your Anovos Stormtrooper costume to high school, most people would have been run out of school. Like, you're not cool. If you wear your Jyn Erso costume to high school, you're not cool. Like, that wasn't cool when a lot of us were growing up. But at Scum and Villainy, even if you show up, some of my favorite costumes, like Alf showed up from Melmac with Rhonda, you know, and he was talking to Mario and Princess Peach, talking to Malcolm Reynolds, talking to Darth Vader about, what happened on Game of Thrones last week. And like, I don't know if there's anywhere outside of a comic book convention that happens, except it happens at Scum and Villainy, which is really, like, to me, the coolest thing is fandoms coming together. People come in as Star Trek all the time, you know, because it's a little bit trolly, but I love it because they're not jerks. They come dressed as a crew from Star Trek, and they have their scanners, and they go and they scan all the people in other fandoms. You know, they'll scan Jane from Firefly, and they'll scan Darth Vader, and then they'll go up to, a stormtrooper and be like, the interference here is incredible. We're trying to find a spot where Spotty can beam us back up to the Enterprise. And everybody plays along. And it makes it more fun for everybody.
Yeah.
Because you get to have those kind of like experiences that you don't normally see. Like, you've been to all these celebrations. You've seen a group of 100 stormtroopers. And while it's cool, when I saw that in 2002, I almost died. And then I saw it in 2005 and I took a million pictures. I took it in 2000 and I saw it in 2007, and my friends who had never seen it, I dragged it to see the group photo of the 501st. Well, it's been, you know, almost 20 years of seeing the 501st group photo. For me, that's not as fun as it was when I first saw it. But when I get to watch Han Solo punching Captain Kirk because there is an alien female that they're both pining over, like, to me, that's like the most incredible thing on earth.
Well, let me ask you this, before we're going to change gears here in a few minutes. Let me ask you this. What has been the biggest like wow that you've had since starting this, cantina? You know, what has wowed you the most? I know that that's kind of an on the spot question and it might be hard to just pinpoint one thing, so feel free to say more than one, but I guess what I'm asking for here is maybe something a little more concrete, because I think you've painted a wonderful picture that this is a space where you can have comic convention / Star Wars celebration / Dragon Con every Friday night, if you want to, right? Like, it's mm-hmm. it's not something that's pigeonholed to, you know, once a year. And if you can travel, I mean, right, if you can get to LA or if you live in that area, this is something you can experience on a regular basis. But yes, tell me something like from inside the cantina. I don't know, just like a great story, because I'm sure you have
I'll give
tons.
You. I've got two or three really good ones. The first one that comes to mind is Peter Mayhew's niece, and he ran a big Twitter campaign around this. Had cystic fibrosis, and she moved from Texas to Los Angeles to have surgery to save her life, essentially. And the first thing that she did when she was cleared by the doctors to leave the hospital after 6 months was come to Scum and Villainy. And I got to sit down with her and her parents for an hour and talk about her journey and her fandom and Peter Mayhew. And that, to me, was one of the absolute coolest things that ever. The second coolest thing was, you know, we have all ages hours. I think it's important, you know, geeks, we are a bar, so we can't have all ages in all the time, but we do have all ages hours. And especially when we were a pop-up, we were all ages all the time. And there was a little girl who was probably 6 years old who came with her best friend, which was the next door neighbor. She was dressed as Princess Leia. The neighbor was dressed as Yoda, and they came with their parents. And the girl ran into the bar and down the back hallway, couldn't wait. And just as she was getting into the main part of the bar, a Kylo Ren cosplayer turned the corner with his lightsaber ignited. And the girl looked like something out of a Bugs Bunny or like a Roadrunner Wile E. Coyote cartoon, the way that she stopped. She turned and ran back out the back door as fast as she could. She was terrified because it was real to her. And in that moment, it was real to her. And over the course of the next hour, she borrowed a toy lightsaber from another guest at the bar and built up the courage to go and have a fight with this Kylo Ren cosplayer who was in there. He's an adult. He was there to have drinks and have a good time. And he took the time out of his 2-hour block of ticketed time to have a lightsaber fight with this little girl who he allowed this little girl to beat him in a lightsaber fight. And to me, that was awesome because now that little girl has courage, right? She walked out of the bar that day with more than she brought in. You know, she felt powerful. She not only, you know, defeated pretend Kylo Ren, but she went up to a stranger and she was comfortable going up to a stranger and having a discussion with an adult to borrow a play weapon to go and fight a pretend bad guy. Mm-hmm. So that was super amazing to watch. And then the third thing is our last month in July when we were ticketed, there was a couple that would drive up from San Diego every weekend. Every Saturday, they would drive up from San Diego and spend all day at the bar. And I was gone for most of the weekends in July. But when I finally met this woman, she was like, you know, she always dresses as Slave Leia and her partner always dressed as Kylo Ren. And she goes, you know, this is, and they would come in and they'd dance and they'd have a good time all night. And she'd bring a Rancor toy with her. And she goes, this is the first place I feel like I can go and be myself and I belong. And it's worth driving 2 hours once a week to be myself and be with people who understand me. And so those are the three things that like, like, you know, make my eyes well up and, you know, my breathing a little heavier, because it's so awesome to see people react so positively to like something you created and just like this silly idea and dream that you have. I don't know if those are the answers you're looking for, but those are kind of the three things, like the three individual things that I'll always carry with me from Scum and Villainy.
It's no wrong answer, and those are great. Those are great stories. I wish it weren't a like 8-hour flight because I'd come every Saturday too.
Gather the New York crew together and we'll have a mini celebration out here.
Yeah. So you've mentioned this a few times, just kind of in passing. I know when it was a pop-up, right, you had to buy a ticket and that's how you got in. And it sounds like now that's not the case, right? Can anybody just come in? Is that how it works now?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we're open Wednesday through Sunday from 6 p.m. till 2 a.m. And all you got to do is walk right in.
Nice. The vibe there just seems great. Because, again, like I see pictures popping up all the time. Whether it's through just like the Star Wars Network or a random friend from college who went there, you know. And it just seems like such a great place and such a unique place because even at a Star Wars convention, everything there is hitting the notes of familiarity, right? Like we see the set pieces, we hear the Star Wars music, but this is a space where it really kind of just invites you into a different world, and allows this new form of, or a unique form of creativity that you're not going to get somewhere else. And I think that's just it's just awesome.
Yeah, you get a chance to play. You know, everybody has real lives that they have to deal with, and the world, without making a political statement, the world is not an easy place right now for anybody. There's a lot going on, and you can't bury your head in the sand and pretend nothing's going on. But sometimes it's nice to to have a Grab Thar's hammer drink and pretend like your biggest trouble is the fact that some alien just stole your pretend spaceship. You know,
absolutely. Oh man, that's great. And jeepers, next time I'm in California, I definitely want to go. And I mean, I'm really hoping next year that I don't know why they still haven't announced this. It's kind of ridiculous, but the next celebration, well, I guess it would be in 2019. The hope is that it's in Anaheim.
My goal for 2019 celebration. Oh, I've got plans for that.
Care to share, or for another day?
At Celebration Orlando, did you see the guy who had Hayden Christensen autograph a glass of sand?
Yes.
So I was like, oh my gosh. 1999 is when The Phantom Menace came out. So this is going to be the 20th anniversary of Phantom Menace, would be Celebration 2019, right?
Yeah.
I am on a quest to create the most realistic Jar Jar Binks costume ever created. Like, fully puppeted face and eyes and everything. And I want to go and get a picture as Jar Jar with Hayden Christensen.
Oh, that would be so good.
And it's just another one of those things, like, this last celebration, there was one really good Jar Jar costume, but, mm-hmm. like, I really want to, like, I have, you probably know Jazz.
Oh, yeah.
Jazz and Rourke and I have been talking about doing a Gungan group, and me doing Jar Jar, and Rourke is going to do one of the Gungan warriors with the shield, and Jazz is going to do Captain Tarples. And so we're trying to figure out how to make that work for the next celebration and then be the only group of Gungan cosplay. The only three people stupid enough to do a Gungan group cosplayers. So we started a private Facebook group called GAS, G-A-S, which is Gungan Appreciation Society. Fun stuff. So, God, I hope it's in Anaheim in 2019.
I do too. I really, really hope so. And I hope it, just for the sake of, I really want to obviously do Celebration, but last time I didn't get a chance to do anything else. So I really want to, you know, I want to do the Redwoods while I'm out that way. Cause I'm never out that way. Drive down, do Rancho Obi-Wan, drive up and do Scum and Villainy. Like, California is the Star Wars Mecca. You know? So,
yeah.
And being that I'm all the way out east in Boston, it makes makes life a little cold. When I watch Star Wars, I make sure that my TV is facing west. So I wonder if it actually is. I'm gonna check that tonight. I'm just curious now. But first off, thank you for all of that stuff about Scum and Villainy. And again, if you're not familiar with it, I really recommend. And we're going to share the link to the page, but pretty simple, scumandvillainy.com. You know, Scum and Villainy Cantina.
Scumandvillainycantina.com.
So definitely check them out. But JC, before I end this episode, I absolutely am fascinated with your perspective on Star Wars. Because again, like all of us, every Star Wars fan, we all have our own perspectives, and we bring sometimes a certain perspective based on what we know in our lives. And I think as a filmmaker, as someone who can write, as someone very creative, as someone who's an entrepreneur, you have such a unique view of Star Wars that I certainly don't have, that Jason certainly doesn't have, a lot of other podcast hosts don't have. And that's not to belittle anybody else. It's just to say everybody's unique. I love your perspective on Star Wars, and something I promised you that I really wanted to hear your perspective on is, again, the hot button issue right now is there too much Star Wars? And specifically when it comes to movies, not necessarily products and all that, which I would also say yes, there's such thing as too much Star Wars products. I would say this. If you are a Star Wars collector, I feel like it'd be impossible in this day and age to collect everything, because it's just not possible.
You couldn't do it.
You just couldn't. But in this perspective of, you know, as someone who is a filmmaker and who is someone who's deeply in love with the Star Wars mythos, like all of us, I'm really curious on your take on, you know, what's now happening with Disney, right? Like we've had two Star Wars films, we've had Rebels. And you know, again, it's looking like a Star Wars film every year for the next foreseeable future.
I'm going to validate what you say with something that Sam Witwer once said to me, which is that everybody thinks that they know Star Wars, and everybody is right, because Star Wars means so many different things to so many different people. There were people who hated Empire Strikes Back because they didn't understand the puppet. Well, everybody says Empire Strikes Back is the best one, and Yoda is one of the greatest characters. But there were a lot of people, when they saw the Muppet as a main character, were like, why is Kermit the Frog's dad in Star Wars? To them, Star Wars was something else that it wasn't to the rest of us. And so everybody's right and everybody's wrong at the same time. That being said, I grew up and got into Star Wars during what is commonly referred to as the Dark Times. Mm-hmm. I was born in 1981, so I started my Star Wars collection in 1984, 1985, like looking at the tail end of the Return of the Jedi, Power of the Jedi, or Power of the Force wave.
The first Power of the Force wave. before Kenner relaunched.
And so there was a time where I had every Star Wars piece of memorabilia available, because there was only six things that you could buy every 2 years. And I loved those things, and they were precious to me, because it was so, you love something so much and you have limited access to it. You devour it. You learn everything about it. You knew everything, right? So part of what built the Star Wars community is the fact that from 1983 to 1999, all you had was 6 hours of Star Wars content. That's all you had. You know, and I guess in 1997, they added a few minutes to Return of the Jedi and A New Hope. So you had, 6 hours and 8 minutes of new Star Wars content. So we devoured it. We learned the name of every cantina alien. We learned the numbers of every stormtrooper. We, memorized the lines of the movie. We can recite the opening crawls. You know that the snowspeeders on Hoth are Incom T-47 snowspeeders. And you know that, you know, the B-Wings were developed by the Mon Calamari, and you know all of these things, and you were able to learn these things, and you were interested in learning these things because that's all you had. You know, you had to dig deeper, you had to learn it better, you had to start to discuss the mythos of the Force and look into Joseph Campbell, and you had the time to do all of that because that's all there was of the thing that you love. We live in a world now, and I'm ranting, I apologize, but we live in a world now where people are talking about the Han Solo movie because it changed directors before the Last Jedi movie has even come out. So you're stepping all over yourself, right? Whereas if you look at Disney's timeline of when they released the first Force Awakens trailer and when they released the first Rogue One trailer, we should be getting a trailer for the Han Solo movie this November. Mm-hmm. So you're going to release a movie for the trailer for the Han Solo movie and a teaser poster and start marketing that movie before your Last Jedi movie comes out. Mm-hmm. You know, you have encroached on your own. I don't even know how they're going to do it, right? Because Han Solo is supposed to come out in May. So you don't start marketing and you don't release any imagery for Han Solo until January. But what does that do to even the prequel trilogy? Because it's a commodity now. We're never going to have the debate about the Porgs that we had about Jar Jar Binks, because if you don't like the Porgs, there's another movie 6 months from now.
Right.
You're never going to have the debate about Han and Greedo shooting first, because they're never going to go back and do anything to these movies, because these movies are disposable. These movies are meant to exist for 6 months. They're built to exist for 6 months to a year, just until the next movie can come out. That's all they are. They're a bridge to the next movie. Whereas the prequel trilogy and the original trilogy were movies that were built to last forever. You know, A New Hope came out before home video. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like those stories had to be full, complete stories in a way that Force Awakens doesn't, because if you didn't like Force Awakens, you're going to get Rogue One. And if you don't like Rogue One, you're going to get Last Jedi. And if you don't like Last Jedi, you're going to get the next thing. And in between all of that, if you want to know why C-3PO's arm is red, and you want to know about this, and you want to know where the lightsaber in Maz Kanata's palace came from, you've got to buy a comic book. Mm-hmm. So they're not even giving you a complete story within the movie you're watching. You're just getting handoffs to other media the whole time. It's a two-hour handoff to other media to devour more, to learn the story. But those, you know, C-3PO has his own comic book line, and Darth Vader has his own comic book line, and Han Solo has his own comic book line. Everybody's got their own thing now, and it's just, you're never going to ever be able to catch up. You're never ever going to be able to have that in-depth conversation, because you're already on to the next thing. And I love Star Wars Rebels. I think it's amazing. But if there isn't new movie news, you've got a new season of Rebels coming out, or a new episode of this, and it's so, there's so much of it that all of it is less special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, a conversation I've had with a lot of people, both Star Wars fans and non-Star Wars fans, like specifically about, well, more so non-Star Wars fans who know about my podcast. And I'll say something. I mean, I appreciated you saying at the top of the show, like, wow, 245 episodes. That is a lot, right? Like, I mean, that's a lot for anybody to commit to. And obviously, this is a project I've been proud of for almost 6 years. But people will say to me, you know, not necessarily big Star Wars fans, but they'll say, how do you have that much to talk about? And I'm like, trust me, it's there. And sometimes they'll be like, well, I guess it's good that there's all these new movies. It's like, I don't need them. Like, we don't need them, right? Before Disney bought Star Wars, there were hundreds of Star Wars podcasts with hundreds of episodes, right? Like, I don't think that the Star Wars fandom falls dependent upon constant movies every year or every 6 months. right? Like, to think that there's nothing to talk about because there's no new content constantly flowing out, I think belittles the goodness of what we have. We wouldn't have places like Scum and Villainy if Star Wars didn't permeate that deeply into our cultural identity.
It's you can talk about, you could have a Ken Burns length PBS documentary on was Anakin Skywalker a hero or a villain? You could talk to countless university professors who would all have their own opinion and their own theories on whether or not Darth Vader was a hero or a villain. Is he a hero or a villain?
Are you asking me?
Well, I mean, rhetorically, right? Rhetorically.
Right, yeah.
You don't need that new movie because that, even that question is so weighted and deep, and there's so much minutia in those original six movies that you can use to prove your point and prove your thesis. You don't need something every 6 months. I would like a movie every 3 years. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good schedule. I spend a year getting really excited for the movie. I watch the movie. I spend a year talking about the movie. I calm down a little bit for a year, and then the next year I get excited about the next movie coming out a year from then. Mm-hmm. Right. I think 3 years, I think there's something special about that. And I think George knew that was the right amount of time between a movie. Of course, it's probably like back then it took 3 years to make a movie where now you can make them in like 8 minutes. But I think there's something to that. It gives you time to debate and rewatch and talk about it with your friends and do all that stuff. But, you know, what you have now is just a community that, you know, well, I'm just only going to pay attention to this, or I'm only going to pay attention to, like, there's so much that everybody has to pick a specialty. You know, well, I am a Darth Vader guy. Well, I'm an R2-D2 guy. Well, I'm a Skywalker historian guy. You can't do all of it anymore. You know, I'm a Lucas era guy. That's me now. I consider myself a Lucas era guy. When people at the bar want to do trivia with me, for the most part, I go, I'll do anything that's Lucas era. Mm. Because Disney era is a whole new thing. Mm. So, you know, how do you, for people like me who grew up consuming everything that was Star Wars that they could get their hands on because there wasn't enough, now there's so much that it's tough to know where you fit in. And that's why I started creating content. You know, I created Hughes the Force, and I created Summer 78 a couple years ago, and Scum and Villainy, and the Comlink YouTube channel that we did, because I still love Star Wars so much, but I can't collect it anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, like, rent and property values in California are so expensive that, like, if I bought Star Wars toys, I'd never have a place to live to put them. And I can't be the trivia guy anymore because I don't have time to learn the last thing before the new thing's already out. You know, I had people want to know how I know so much about the original trilogy. And it's like, well, I watched it for 30 years, you know, mm-hmm. I've seen Force Awakens 5 times. And my go-to movie isn't Force Awakens now, it's Rogue One. So I've seen Rogue One 7 or 8 times, but, you know, if you give me Rogue One trivia, I can, like, the toughest Rogue One thing I know is, like, Jyn Erso's alias is Leanna Halleck, right? Or, you know, that's it. I don't know planets. I don't know aliens. I don't know, you know, two tubes, I guess, is one of, I just don't know it.
It's so funny, just to interject real quick, but, you know, you said, I don't know the planets. It's almost like they understand that by giving us the names of the planets in Rogue One. Because it's like, here's like eight new planets in one movie, right? I mean, it's not eight. I love Rogue One, but right, like, it's almost as if they understand, like, we're going to take you to so much stuff so fast, we're just going to lay it out there for you, what it is, right?
Yeah, this planet's called Scarif. Yeah. And here's the trivia on Scarif. It was somebody at Starbucks when Gareth Edwards put his name down, he said, "My name's Gareth." They wrote Scarif, and that became a planet in Star Wars.
Is that true?
Yeah, that's true, actually.
Okay.
it was a barista at Starbucks named Scarif. But I don't know what the other planets are. What are the other planets in Rogue One? They even put them on the screen, and I don't know them.
Yeah.
You know? But if I asked you, you know, name all the planets from episode 1 through episode 6, I bet you could probably do it.
Oh, I could do it in a heartbeat.
You know, what is it? It's Tatooine,
Naboo,
Coruscant, Naboo,
Kamino,
Geonosis. You know, like, you can go through and yeah. At Geonosis, yeah, Mustafar,
Polis Massa.
And then they've got some of the, in Revenge of the Sith, they've got like Utapau and Cato Neimoidia and some of those like look-ins during Order 66, but you can even name those,
right?
You know, but you can't name, Yavin 4, I know, sure. from Rogue, but you can't name, and Mustafar, but you can't name the planet that Galen Erso dies on. And you can't name the planet that Jyn Erso was on the Imperial colony. What was the planet that Jyn Erso grew up on? I don't know. I know that there's a flashback scene where she's on Coruscant, though.
Yeah.
They don't label, but right. I know it's Coruscant because I know the other movies.
Yeah.
So it's just like, I don't know. I kind of miss being, having the time to consume everything at a deeper level, mm-hmm. you know, to understand the movies a little bit more below the surface. And I think ultimately what's going to happen is when a movie doesn't need to exist for a period of time where it can be examined below the surface, I don't think movies are made that have much beyond below the surface. And then you're getting worse quality movies with less heart and less going on. You know, it becomes a fireworks display. It becomes a Transformers The Last Night as opposed to Empire Strikes Back. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's good for Star Wars, and I don't think it's good for Star Wars fans, and I don't think it's good for Hollywood or the film industry. It's not sustainable. That's why I say that there is such a thing as too much Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I'll give you an example. 48 hours from now is a special day. Do you know what it is?
Force Friday.
It's Force Friday. Are you going out on Force Friday?
I am.
You and I are. I'm going because Kyle Newman texted me. He's like, "You want to go out on Force Friday?" Yes, I do. Because I want to hang out with Kyle and Rourke and Elliot and the people who I see around Star Wars.
Yeah.
I'm not going to buy anything. When Force Friday for The Force Awakens happened, you better believe I was there. I got there at 7 o'clock. I waited in line all night, you know?
Were you able to get anything if you wanted to, though? Right? Because it was such a nightmare, the first one.
No, not really. I bought a BB-8 plush for my nephew. Okay. but because I had to quit collecting Star Wars because there was too much of it. But it's like, it's the third Force Friday in 3 years. It's like, and then, you know, we're going to all go crazy in October when they put the pre-sale tickets up. And we're all going to go crazy to go to The Last Jedi. And then we're going to hope that the Han Solo trailer plays before The Last Jedi. So that it's like, because it's not good enough just to live with the Star Wars you have for 5 minutes. You want to be able to walk out of the movie talking about Han Solo and you just skip over. It's just too much. I'm sorry. I hate to say it. It's too much.
No, you know, I mean, when we were talking off air before we started, I mean, when I asked you, I said, you know, hey, are you cool having a little chat about this towards the end? Because I really appreciate your perspective. And you were like, you know, like, yeah, I honestly think there is too much. And I immediately said, I'm in your camp, man. I totally agree. And, you know, those of you who listen to the show regularly, Jason and I, you know, we looked at this question not too long ago, and you know, is there such a thing as too much Star Wars? And Jason and I both had different answers, and as many of you did. I'm with you, JC. I think there is such a thing as too much. Jason doesn't. I mean, he thinks, oh, if there was a new Star Wars movie every week, he'd probably be excited. You know, and it's, I'm not judging that. I'm not condemning that. But I appreciate your perspective because you articulate it better than I could. I think that's just the truth for me is like, I love Star Wars. And yes, if there is a Star Wars movie every 5 months, I'm going to be there online buying the pre-sale tickets for sure. However, I think that something is being taken away from us that is mm-hmm. so quintessential to Star Wars. That's my biggest grief with it. It's not that like, oh, I hate the stuff that they're giving us. It's just like, let us enjoy it, right? Like, let it permeate. Yeah.
Here's an example I'll give. And I may get some hate for this, and I don't mean it in a bad way. I'm 36 years old. Somebody from my perspective, when I was in high school, if I was walking through an airport, or I was walking through a mall, or I was at a toy store, or I was anywhere on the earth, and I saw somebody in a Star Wars shirt, I could walk up to them, and we were friends. We were immediately friends. And it was like that at Celebration. It was like that at Fan Days, right? You just go up to anybody, and they were your friend. I do a lot of traveling. I see thousands of Star Wars shirts at every airport I go to. I don't go up and talk to people in Star Wars shirts anymore because everybody has one, mm-hmm. you know, and I can't go up to the guy who bought the red Millennium Falcon shirt at Target and say, oh my God, on the last episode of Rebels when Thrawn did this and he had the Issa Lamiri painting behind him, didn't it remind you of the Timothy Zahn book? Because they're going to be like, what?
Yeah.
But 20 years ago, I could do that.
Right.
And they'd be like, yes, oh my God. And the Vornskers and the thing and the Mara Jade and the Wayland complex and the dreadnoughts and the black, you know. Right. So I've lost that. And what I've come to realize is that to me, that community, that friendship, that depth of understanding another human being is more important to me than a new story.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, you and I are friends because we met in 2011. I don't know if the circumstances of, and we still talk, not a lot, but mm-hmm. like online, and I follow you on Facebook and we'll catch up once a year at the Star Wars stuff. But I don't know if circumstances today are conducive to friendships like ours, coming together the way they used to.
Yeah.
At a Star Wars celebration or at a, you know, at a Star Wars Fan Days in Texas. I just don't know if the way that content is being pumped out now fosters those like types of meetings and interactions. And that makes me sad. I mean, luckily, I have a huge group of Star Wars friends from, you know, back in the, you know, 2000 to 2010 when stuff wasn't as crazy. But I don't know. I don't know how easy that is.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, again, there's just...
obviously, I'm passionate about this.
Sure. Well, if you meet a Star Wars fan who's not passionate about something in the perspective of Star Wars, are they really a fan? You know?
Nope.
Right. I mean, and you know, I know there are several, there are thousands of fans who are in every way pleased with what's going on, right? Who are pleased that 6 months after Last Jedi, they're going to have a new Han Solo movie. And, you know, the following year, they're going to have Episode 9. And then the year after that, God forbid, we have a Boba Fett movie. I don't know what we're going to get. I just hope it's not Boba Fett. I didn't want Han Solo either, but it doesn't really matter. You know, that's just I don't mind that Disney has taken the mantle and has decided to, I mean, of course I was ecstatic the day we heard the news that Disney had bought Lucasfilm and we were getting 7, 8, and 9. I was ecstatic. I was thrilled I'm never going to deny that. And I'm still thrilled that we're getting a sequel trilogy. However, that excitement has cooled a bit in the last few years because I still don't think, specifically for 7, 8, 9, they still, and obviously they've only given us one movie. 8 and 9 will do a better job at this, but episode 7 didn't convince me that it needed to be made. And not just because of like a marketing reason, but like Return of the Jedi is so perfect. And there's a goodness in that. There's a goodness in this fairy tale being wrapped up, you know, with, in a way, happily ever after. And then, you know, this new Entertainment Weekly article that came out, they make a point to say it says a long time ago. It never says happily ever after. And it's like, that's true. However, George was trying to give us a picture of happily ever after. So you can't just undo that without good reason. And again, like I think if 8 and 9 go well, that'll be great. But if 8 and 9 in any way fall flat, and not to sound overly negative or like a jerk, but I will be with you. Like, I'm a Lucasian Star Wars fan. Like, what Disney did, I don't need.
Here's the problem. If eight falls flat, it doesn't matter because they've got Han Solo in May. Right. Han Solo falls flat, it doesn't matter because they have episode 9 12 months after that. So the problem is that there's no urgency to make this picture perfect because the next one will pick up the slack.
Right.
And that's what scares me. And I think that's kind of, I will sing praise of Rogue One until my last breath. Force Awakens, I'm not like a huge Force Awakens bandwagon guy. I didn't need to see Force Awakens.
Right.
It wasn't something where I was like, there's nothing in that movie where I was like, how does this happen? Why does this happen? I was more excited. I was literally on the edge of my seat in an IMAX theater watching Rogue One while the guy on the ship was saying, "Take it!" to the Death Star plans as Darth Vader's marching down the hallway.
Sure.
Yeah. I was literally like, oh my God, what are they going to do? What are they going to... I've watched Star Wars at that point for 34 years. And I still was worked up about making sure the Death Star plans got to Princess Leia. I didn't ever have that moment in Force Awakens.
Sure.
And what's amazing about Rogue One is I knew what was going to happen. I've already seen it.
Yeah.
You know, you were able to get me tense about a situation that I knew the outcome on. And that's pretty awesome. That's good filmmaking and that's good storytelling.
Yeah.
So, man, I don't know. We need to get together and talk about this more when people don't have to listen to our babbling for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah. And I'm sure there are several people who aren't very pleased. I in no way am trying to say my, and I don't think you are either. Like, we're right, you're wrong.
No.
It's just a perspective.
Because Star Wars is different things to different people. And they're all right. If Star Wars is entertainment to you, if it is a fun thing, if it's something you love to be entertained by, the more Star Wars, the better. Mm-hmm. Rebels, TV shows, cartoons, digital shorts, all of that stuff, because it's entertainment that you love. And you can sit down and you watch it and you can love it. And you can talk about it with your friends, and that's where it is. But to me, Star Wars is a moral compass. And it's always got to show true to North, mm-hmm. you know? And commoditizing it is a good way for that compass to not show true North, in my opinion. And so that's why I'm so passionate about making sure it's all good, because to me it's how I grew up knowing what was right and what was wrong, in addition to my parents, but like, you know, to me, it's more than entertainment, I guess, is what I'm saying. And that's why it's important to me that it's done right.
Right. Yeah. And I,
it's something I love, you know, I don't want to have to say, I'm not really into this stuff anymore because I love it so much, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I'll admit, like, I cannot wait. So we're recording this two nights before Force Friday, but I always release on Thursday evenings. So for any of you who are listening right off the bat, you know, tonight is Force Friday, and I will be there, and I'm excited. Like, I love doing this. It's a lot of fun. I'm not going to deny that excitement that I have for all of these festivities. But I also have like a small, I mean, I'm not going to walk out of there with my cart full. I'm going to walk out with maybe one or two items, if that, right? And I'm excited because I get to go with my friend and, you know, I'll probably make some new friends in line. Like, to me, my favorite part of that experience still is kind of like you alluded to. The reason you're going is because your friends asked you to. And that's the main reason I want to be there. But I'd be lying to say I'm not excited, because of course I am. But I'd be fine not doing this again for another 3 years. And I think right. that more is gained by waiting. And again, like not to also get on like a soapbox and rant, but obviously we live in a culture of immediacy in every way, yes. shape, and form. And I, of course, am guilty of it. I love Netflix. I love Amazon Prime. but in some way, there are certain things that I don't ever want to be part of that culture. And Star Wars is not one. Star Wars is one of them. Like, I don't want Star Wars to be grouped in.
It's precious.
Yes.
Precious.
Right. Exactly. In the same way that, so in my last job, like, obviously I work in the religious world. My last job, they did on Ash Wednesday, they did like stop for ashes, like just like a quick, like little, like almost like drive through type deal. And I remember being kind of, I didn't say anything, but like it kind of bothered me, not because I'm like some super conservative traditionalist about these sorts of things. And I understood that there was a goodness in that to try to reach more people. But I also thought to myself, wow, this kind of takes away from like the specialness of it, right? Like of doing it in like a church setting, doing it in a certain communal way, right? Like you take something away from it when you take it out of its context. And I think Star Wars is something that's always been given to us. I mean, for the majority of its existence, in kind of this slow paced, slow roll out kind of deal that really allows you to, like you said, like I liked the little breakdown you gave, a year to dive into the movie, rewatch it multiple times, a year to talk about it and think about it, and then a year to rest and get excited about what's next. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, like it just kind of makes sense. You know, and that's again, like the reason I say there is too much Star Wars is because of the sadness of not having that opportunity to really let it sink in. And that is such a huge part of Star Wars.
Exactly. Like to echo what you just said is, do you watch Game of Thrones?
Oh,
are you more excited about episode set? Like we have to wait a year and a half for the next episode of Game of Thrones. And I promise you, the next episode of Game of Thrones, you will be more excited about than you were about the season 7 finale here. Because you have to wait. You have a year of anticipation. You know, like it's talking about something for a whole year before you finally get that craving satisfied versus talking about something for 6 months, you know?
Right. Yeah. So anyway, there are some of our thoughts on what's happening with Star Wars.
If you don't like what I say, come to Scum and Villainy and let me hear your opinion.
Yeah. Well, cause obviously, you know, right at the end of the day, our opinions are our opinions, and I'm not looking to argue with somebody who wants to say, no, you're completely wrong. Like, this is why having Star Wars constantly is so good. If that's your opinion, great. Like, if that's what Star Wars is to you, great. I don't want to take that away from you. But you're not going to ever convince me that that's the best way to do it, because I just don't think it is. And, I'm unfortunately, we live in a world right now where you're either right or you're wrong. right? if you don't agree with me, you are wrong, and therefore you are bad. Like, I don't think that at all. I mean, I know my co-host doesn't agree with me. I don't care. Like, his way of loving Star Wars is not the same way I do, and that is totally cool.
But that's part of the fun of it, too, is, like, being able to talk about it and, like, understanding why he loves it. Oh, my God, I understand why you're like that.
Yeah.
I wish I was like that, but I'm not. I'm upset.
Well, anyway, I think we've been going for a little while here, and we can, I know you've got things to do, like run a bar tonight. before we go though, is there anything I might've missed that you want to say again, like give us the information one more time about Scum and Villainy or really any of the other project. And I can't believe I was remiss to mention this, but that's right. I mean, probably most of you watched that clip. It was called, what is it called? Summer of 78 or something?
Summer 78.
And it's, little J.J. Abrams making Star Wars film, a Star Wars film with his old camera and his old action figures in his front yard. You made that. Like, in case you didn't know that, this is the man, J.C. Reifenberg, is the man that made that film, which was all over the Star Wars world just 2 years ago. And not even just because of its connection to Force Awakens, because it connected to all of us as Star Wars fans.
I mean, that's what, that's what Star Wars is about, is like, I worked on, I had started a documentary project a long time ago, before I was doing Comlink, called, we were exploring the idea of Star Wars as inspiration, meaning most movies you watch. I love Guardians of the Galaxy. It's one of my favorite movies. But I watch Guardians of the Galaxy, and my experience with the movie ends when the movie ends. Mm-hmm. Star Wars is a unique thing in that it inspires people to go out and chase their passion and their creativity. And so if you're a mathematician and you watch Star Wars, your experience with Star Wars doesn't end when the movie ends. You watch Star Wars and you want to go out and come up with a formula to, to invent hyperspace. Or you want to, the head robotics professor at MIT talks about loving Star Wars when she was growing up and being amazed by R2-D2 and C-3PO. I totally lost my train of thought. Anyway, Star Wars is amazing.
End every sentence with that.
If I guess what I can say is I have a really cool, amazing Star Wars thing on the horizon that I'm not allowed to talk about yet. Is more in the video content world of things than it is the bar world of things, that hopefully will all come together. And if you are one of the people who loves more Star Wars content, hopefully I can help bring you that content every week or every couple weeks coming up in this really cool way that I'm not allowed to talk about.
thanks for all the crypticness, High Sparrow.
I'll tell you what, once it's announced and once we start doing it, I'll come back on the show and fill in all the blanks I just laid out, like right. The Mad Lib.
All right, I'm gonna hold you to that. Actually, just saying those couple things makes me think, again, a little side tangent, but you might want to weigh on this. Talking about, like, how you were looking into for a little while there doing just like, some sort of documentary film on how Star Wars inspires, right? I love that there is this avenue of study now about Star Wars. So, like, as someone who, works in academia, who, studied in college and grad school for a while, I enjoy thinking like that. I enjoy reading stuff like that. And it has me thinking, again, just talking about content, I enjoy reading more stuff about how Star Wars was made or things around Star Wars culture than I do reading new novels. if that makes sense. So, for instance, like Chris Taylor's How Star Wars Conquered the Universe, one of the greatest books on Star Wars I've ever read. Far better than any of the new canon books I've read. And I've really enjoyed some of them. Like, I loved Bloodline. I loved the Aftermath books. But they don't even compare to how much I love that Chris Taylor book or the J.W. Rinzler books. Like I want to, again, I want to sink my teeth into what made these things so special and how are they affecting other people. That fascinates me far more than a new Thrawn book. By the way, I finished Thrawn and I was so not impressed. So I don't know, a lot of people loved it, but I was kind of bored the whole book. So.
You're going to like the thing that I have that's in the works.
Ah, damn it, JC.
That's all it is not, that's all it is. So it'll be cool. And one day I'm going to try to go back and revisit that documentary.
Yeah. You know what? I will say this, because you mentioned Kyle Newman, and I know that you are friends with him, which is really cool. A few episodes ago, my friend Greg mentioned, because he called me out on it, I had been watching Fan Days on repeat, like every night for a week.
Fanboys,
yeah. And simply because of the fact that, like, I love that it's a movie about Star Wars and a group of friends who love Star Wars. I mean, I watch that movie every night for a week rather than watch Force Awakens or Rogue One or, well, hell, I mean, any other Star Wars movie too, to be fair. But there was just something about that experience that movie informs that is a lot of fun to rewatch.
Because it was us.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? It was us. You were watching one of those characters was us.
Yeah.
You know? I loved Fanboys before I met Kyle. And I was lucky enough to work with Kyle on a little documentary project we did for Entertainment Weekly called Return of the Jedi. Where we interviewed celebrities about their love for Return of the Jedi for its 30th anniversary. Mm. Kyle knows more about Star Wars lore and its impact on society and pop culture than anybody on Earth. And nobody is more – I don't know anybody who is more passionate about Star Wars or opinionated than Kyle Newman. In good ways and maybe some bad ways, but mostly all in good ways. Kyle, if you want to have a serious conversation about Star Wars, track down Kyle Newman and Sam Witwer at a Star Wars convention, because they are the Yodas of Star Wars lore and fandom.
I love listening to Sam Witwer talk Star Wars. The dude is incredible, but I would put you in that category too. I mean, and that's why I've always been glad to get your perspective. And granted, we didn't jump into any real in-universe stuff here tonight, but you know, when you finally launch this project that you will then be allowed to talk about, I will come up with something in-universe to have you break down for us.
how about we tease your audience? I'll tell you when we get off the air.
Okay. And I won't say anything. I'll sign an NDS. anyway, JC, seriously, thank you so much for coming on, especially last minute like this. I mean, I messaged you like 3 hours ago and you made it happen.
Dude, it's so much fun.
And I appreciate, as always, your perspective on the Star Wars community and also like just the story about Scum and Villainy. And I really can't wait to get out there someday. And I think it's great what you're providing, not just Star Wars fans, but like fans of all things geek. It's just incredible that you've created this haven to be yourself and to really push you the boundaries of how creative you can be. And no matter how much you want to push that, you're going to be accepted.
Yeah. We've got a zero tolerance policy for bullying or any sort of, you know,
I just hope
derogatory anything.
It'd be great if all your bouncers dressed like Malik Healy. So, again, hit us with some, you know, if people want to, you know, follow what you're up to, all the projects you're doing, Scum and Villainy, how can they do that?
Best place to follow Scum and Villainy is on Facebook, facebook.com/Scum and Villainy Cantina. Hit the like button. We post stuff and cool fun things all the time. If you want to know what's going on with me, You could friend me on Facebook. I recently opened up my Facebook to people who I don't personally know. I don't post a ton on there. My Twitter is at Reifenberg, R-E-I-F-E-N-B-E-R-G. I kind of post when I have stuff going on that also. The best way, though, is I love that bar. I'm at that bar all the time. Come to the bar. Tell me my opinions are wrong, or tell me that they're right, or tell me, did I ever think about this? And let's talk about it, because that's the most fun, you know. I love thinking I'm right, but I also love being proved wrong.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's good that, you know? I mean, well, it's nice again that you can can be that honest. Well, man, I mean, again, thank you. Really, really thank you for coming on and sharing all of that goodness, as you always do. And I'm looking forward to getting you back on again, especially after this project launches. And everything you've always done, like all the projects you've done specifically regarding Star Wars, have been like out of the park, like good. Like, so I can't wait. Everything you've done has been quality, well-produced, well-made, well-thought-out. So I'm looking forward to it. Whatever it might be.
Awesome.
But before we go, just I want to remind listeners again, our recent poll, obviously we're waiting till next episode when Jason's back. And that poll entry, again, is we're asking you to share the scene in Star Wars that most captures the feeling of spirituality. So when you think spirituality, what scene in Star Wars do you think of? So be sure to let us know what you think.
Can I answer?
That. Yeah, go ahead.
Luke says, "You want the impossible." Yoda lifts the X-wing.
Boom.
The music. Oh,
yeah.
Perfect.
So there you go. JC's already provided you an example. So definitely let us know what you think is for you your favorite scene of spirituality in Star Wars. For those of you who are subscribing on Patreon, look out for this coming weekend. We're going to do our first episode of the scene by scene breakdown. And we are going to start with Phantom Menace because that's what you guys wanted. So that's what we're going to do. And I love Phantom Menace, so I can't wait. So we're going to be looking at we'll probably look at the first two scenes because they're kind of short in Phantom Menace. So if you want to hear that breakdown by Jason and I, be sure to subscribe on Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/wampuslairpodcast. Get all that good information. And again, you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/wampuslairpodcast. Follow us on Twitter at wampuslair. And of course, you can always shoot us an email at wampuslairpodcast@gmail.com. That's going to do it for this episode of the Wampus Lair Podcast. JC, again, thank you so much for coming on. I can't wait to get to Scum and Villainy. On behalf of Jason, who's not here but is with us in Force Ghost mode, and JC Reifenberg and myself, Carl, thank you for listening to this episode of The Wampus Lair, and we will see you next time here in The Wampus Lair.